life of energy and people can feel it. And I think that presence, that curiosity is what's gotten me my next career move, my opportunity, what got me to jump from being in a bank to being in tech. So like the framework of my life is curiosity.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Last week, we held our International Women's Day event at Google's offices, and we partnered with loads of amazing companies like Coinbase, Institute of Digital Fashion, and Notepad. Honestly, the energy in that room was so, so special, and we're going to make sure that you as listeners get the value from that event too. So we'll release the talks as bonus episodes very soon. But today, we're going to speak to the amazing Bianca Lopez. She's an entrepreneur. She's on multiple boards. She has advised something like 40 different financial institutions and central banks and governments to reshape their approach to technology, because what she cares about is driving meaningful impact using tech. I feel like she's the sort of person that, you know, sometimes at a dinner party, you get like a group of people hunched over, kind of listening intently to somebody in the room because they're just really fascinating. I think that's what would happen if you invited her over. She started out in banking, then in biometrics, and now she's running her own business focused on identity, digital identity, and she runs her own fund. Her whole philosophy is around presence and curiosity and saying yes to opportunities. That's what got her to where she is today. She's also going to talk about the problem with idolizing people, as long as it ends up being the wrong people, and talking about having agency in your life and your affairs. So without further ado, here's Bianca. Welcome to the show, Bianca. We've started by kicking off our episodes with the most useful thing first. So what has been your most helpful strategy or tip or framework that's got you where you are today?
I think my framework is curiosity, like great curiosity, gratitude. I live a life of energy and people can feel it. And I can feel it too when I do it wrong. And I think that presence, that curiosity is what's gotten me my next career move, my opportunity, what got me to jump from being in a bank to being in tech. Like I was a banker. I was working at RBC. Then I joined this biometric company. So like the framework of my life is curiosity.
I really like that because I imagine that's also going to be what the sort of thing you're going to be leaning on in some of our later conversation in terms of like how or why you've chosen to pursue or run or build all these different things. So you wear several hats in what you do. You run Authentify and you run Rue Ventures.
Yeah. So one of the things I am is I'm a co-founder of Authentify. And I'm the chairwoman of a venture fund called CanoeX, which runs a series of funds and financial services value proposition companies that are regulated. And then Rue Ventures is my personal investment vehicle. Let's call it like a family office in the making of where I've either invested as an angel or I've helped companies or advised companies through.
Amazing. Actually, I just want to briefly ask you, have you seen in the news about the changes in the UK in terms of how much you need to earn in order to be an angel investor?
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, basically because that number will decrease, you'll suddenly cut off the ability for a bunch of women to be angel investors in the UK. I mean, in your venture or investment work, do you see many other women, other like female angel investors? And
unfortunately not. I'm not surrounded by as many powerful women as I would like to be. I keep telling myself I'm just not in the right room yet and that they exist and they're around, because often here and there I get the luck to elbow rooms in a room with people like yourselves, Lauren, and others. But the reality is the fact. We see less than 2% of actual VC capital being deployed by women, and even less than that in successful Series A and B rounds by companies that are either co-founded by women, entirely owned by women, or significantly owned by women. So I think the reality is that it's one that is sad and one that I think when I get up every morning that I can make a significant change at.
And what kind of things are you investing in with Rue Ventures?
So I have like three areas of interest, Lauren, and I would probably broadly describe them into the first one being identity, which is like my area of expertise and my area of love. I fell in love with identity and biometrics like 12 years ago, and I have not looked back ever since. It's only expanded. And this is super connected to a lot of really interesting developments in the area of zero knowledge proofs, cryptography, and anything to do with anonymizing and eliminating the need for databases, all the really cool foundational promises of Web3. I'd call them in the identity and access management bucket of what I invest and I'm interested in. Second area would be what I call access. You know, my love with technology and, you know, what technology can do is it's to me real and impactful change. Spend a ton of time in like finance and fintech. To be honest, yeah, cool. We all got like colorful cards and cooler apps, but we really haven't changed anything when it comes to poverty premiums or who pays for banking or any of this infrastructure. So I invest in things from people trying to change the digital foundation of value, like refi and what we value and how we value things, to things like CBDC and other digital money infrastructure. So looking at if we were to rebuild the world, first we identify and include the right people and keep them protected and private. Second, maybe we need to give them access to stuff. So that's why access is my second pillar of investment and interest. And third would be energy. Energy to me is a foundation of also how I live. I think if I could manage and bottle energy is actually the currency of life and people. But talking more practically, we've messed up the world and burned lots of places. And the reality of coming from Brazil or doing work in the Caribbean like I do, you know, we're going to have significant people just submerge. They already have no access to water, food, and the basics. So I kind of care that all this tech that we do doesn't just, you know, chip people and take them to Mars, but actually does something. And in my lifetime, I will actually get to continue to experience and seeing this in reality in these countries I love. So I invest in renewable energy sources and other technologies and digital infrastructure, again, that makes all these advancements possible, traceable, accountable. So that's what I'm interested in. And for anybody out there, like doing stuff in this area or thinking of stuff, like this is what not only I invest my time, my money, my energy, my resources, my capital, and my network, because that's what life is about, community.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you actually got a really clear set of things that you care about. And actually, it sounds like you care about people and a sort of equitable world, and you're really clear about how you contribute to the world that you want to see. So that's pretty amazing that you can sort of be so clear about those areas. There, so many people would not be able to name their sort of broader mission or how they're going to get there. So the fact that it's you invest in and are interested in identity, access, and energy, yeah, that's super, super clear. And I want to get into the identity stuff, because there'll be quite mixed knowledge amongst listeners in terms of understanding around digital identity and how that interacts with the blockchain. So I think let's take it back first from a sort of slightly more newbie point of view. How would you even sort of start defining identity or digital identity? And what is it that's significant about the blockchain when it comes to any of that?
Cool. So let's like break this down, because it's like, this is my favorite thing. The thing I hate the most about my industry is how complicated we all sound. Mm. And I actually think we should all take a page book from like Starbucks on like, you know, if you're going to sound complicated, at least invent the language that like the average person can just understand and like communicate, like ordering their lattes. Identity is as simple and as cool as people, which is why it's so complex and messed up. Because if you think about it, let's forget the tech, forget blockchain, forget this conversation for 1 second. Just think about where you are in the world, or where the people you love are in the world, or the countries you are in the world, where you've been or you're worried about. Every single one of those places has a different identity schema as we understand it today. So even the piece of plastic that the government hands to you looks different, is registered different, sits in a different database, it's structured different, and guess the exciting? They don't talk to each other. They don't interoperate. So yes, your passport has a chip that still has a, you know, secure element that is the same, which is why some countries can scan. But just think about the complexity of, you know, how data is stored, and also who has access and the right to say, you're Lauren or I'm Bianca, my hair is brown, your hair is blonde. These are attributes and things. So attributes meaning things we call in the blockchain, like identifiers and DIDs and other acronyms and soup letters that we're going to get into. But identity matters because it matters about how you build a system of trust. Governments, countries, people gave other people names to be able to identify, to be able to know you are Lauren, you sound like Lauren. I've seen you before. Yeah, you're Lauren. And when you think about technology, whether it be the blockchain or AI or any computational ability to read and understand and exchange data, you bring up a whole lot of questions around ownership, around provenance, like who has the right to say that this information is Lauren, who holds, you bring up issues around custody. And these are all really big foundational questions of the internet in general, or the way human beings interact. And we interact through technology. We interact through data exchange systems. Web 2 is a layer of communication between machines and computer. When you talk about Web 3 and the change in the actors in the ecosystem, you bring up a whole other issues or opportunities that identity in the regular world hasn't solved. We haven't solved the fact that my piece of paper from Brazil means nothing when I moved to Denmark. And they looked at me and they said, ha, cool, come back when you have this stamp, this other thing. Talk about transactions. Talk about the number of times information moved hands. So what's the opportunity for blockchain or Web3 and digital identity? Immense, immense. But it's an opportunity that doesn't, you know, just skip the foundational ethical privacy conversations that I love just because the technology is cooler or more capable. It still has all these other foundational opportunities and issues of custody, ownership, storage. But what's cool is that with technologies like Web3, like blockchain, the concept of digital identity, like we know today, these pieces of paper and old school irrelevant attributes that, you know, if you think about the fact that every time your bank interacts with you, maybe they ask you a PIN or a personal verified question, what's the name of your dog or something. They miss the opportunity every time to have a conversation with you, to learn something new. And this is data that gets exchanged and stored. It's data that creates breach opportunities because there's data honeypots everywhere. You know, all these really cool problems and realities of how technology evolved over time can be and have an opportunity when it comes to Web3 and blockchain. So I get just excited that I'm like, we need to have the conversations around systems, around ethics, and around a whole lot of issues that, you know, any data system and any technology should be scrutinized through. But the opportunity is massive.
So what are you personally doing in terms of starting to solve some of those challenges? Obviously, it's enormous, but how are you applying Web3 in your business, Authentify?
Okay, so Authentify, I had been obsessed about identity of people and human access for about just over a decade. Had worked everywhere from like India to Africa to Brazil to Russia to Ukraine in digital identity systems to try to understand them. And then I met my co-founder, Olivier, who was doing merchandising for Formula One and had actually sold a Lewis Hamilton suit signed by Lewis Hamilton in his shop. And it turned out it was really fakely signed by the mechanic. And he went around going, oh my God, I have a huge reputational issue of this suit being signed by somebody who's actually not the person. So how do I solve this issue of provenance? And we met, and that was about 2 years ago. And I turned my obsession of signals and identifiers and attributes of people into things and started studying and understanding how do we connect technologies like IoT and chip technology and other things in the processing world to blockchain, where you live in a world of open promises, where signals can be understood and we could build a world of different interactions of brands, consumers, people, and things. So like you heard me say in the beginning, pretty consistent in my obsession about building a better place. So it seemed really exciting to be able to take premises of what happens when we identify the physical world around us. What kind of accountability experiences, opportunities can I create? Authentify started in the world of sports. We started by putting chips in Formula One helmets and merchandising and creating unique channels of experiences between fans and teams. And by identifying something, you enable a new type of ownership. And with a new channel of private ownership, you enable brands to no longer have to hold databases, honeypots of emails and outdated information, and really say, huh, maybe it's time to claim back my agency and my channels and say to, you know, the ad duopoly in the world that this is my customer in the first place. And here's technology creating a new world of access and a new world of experiences. So that's what we're doing. And that's how we're using and leveraging a little bit of Web3 and a lot of principles in Web3 to what we do every day.
Wow. And I know we spoke a little bit just before our call about sort of defining Web3. I'm interested to know whether you describe yourself as working in Web3, just because partly because there's a lot of sort of conversations around defining it, including, you know, we've defined it on this podcast, gone a bit back and forth. And yeah, I'm personally going back and forth because there's been so many bad actors in the space, but I felt this like pressure to defend Web3 as being almost like the sort of answer to everything. Nothing is the one solution for everything. And I don't think the kind of pure version of Web3 is the solution for everything, because I also don't see it as being adopted by every single person. There's a sort of a place for these different types of technologies, including decentralized technologies. And I suppose for myself and women of Web3, I'm interested in the kind of broader next iteration of the internet. And that very much includes a lot of these technologies. But I suppose, yeah, I'd be interested to know, do you describe yourself as working in this space? And also, what reaction does that get from people when you talk about Web3?
It's funny you ask, because like, of course, I describe myself working in this space. I'm working in tokenization. I talk about which chains, and like we have a partnership with Fireblocks at Authentify. We do tokenization partnerships around carbon markets. So of course I am in this space and proud to be in this space. I've been told by some of my investors or PR people, like, shh, 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 no blockchain talk. And I'm like, guys, like, what do you mean? And they're like, no NFT, no blockchain talk. And I am also the same in terms of, you know, give me a bad name and I will give you, just give me time. I've spent 10 years and I think I'll spend another 10, if not more, if I'm not as effective, explaining what identity is and what it means. And that's an opportunity, a blessing, to do that work and to be able to understand how change the world during that work. I think Web3 is the same. You know, we're talking about the new layer of communication between things. When you look at things like Nostr protocol, or when you look at other promises of, you know, censorship-free tokenized communication and value exchange, if you ask me, like, I work in the world of openness and possibilities. That's why I work in tech. So when somebody asks me, like, oh, but what about, I'm like, do you want to talk about the financial markets? Do you want to talk about the technology markets? Which egotistical boy with their toys and a huge story that they were going to rule the world, that you all just, like, I don't know, moved entire markets that could have solved real problems, is the flavor of the month? And I think that's what we've done insanely wrong in every industry. We've idolized human beings as these, like, sources of, you know, I appreciate the desire for having an all savior silver bullet of matrix that we all wake up on the other side. Let me know when you find it. Invite me to the ceremony. But, you know, like, life just isn't that way. So I am also in that feeling of you, Lauren, of very serious people, like cryptographers, mathematicians, like computational experts, design, UX people, ethics people that have invested their career to be in Web3. And, you know, here I am attached to a new name of something phony now. Great, right? I think recognizing that and coming from a place of agency, what is the power in the technology? And I think, like anything that is truly transformational, that can drive quick wins, will always drive the gold rush of the goons and, you know, the circus artists. The people that will stay are the people that are serious, the people that understand the transformational value on saying, one, with the computational amount of data and power we're going to have, the current infrastructure is just not going to work. So if you just understand some foundational truths about where society is going, it's like arguing climate change. Like, are we arguing the speed in which country is going to, like, you know, there's some basics here. There's just no longer need for questioning. So when I get confronted, and sometimes confronted in good ways, in a growing scale up company, we're building infrastructure technology, and we're dealing, Lauren, with like large brands like Gilbert, like brands that changed, have been around for 200 years. These brands are looking at me and saying, you know, it can't be the flavor of the week, dude. Like, you already look startup-y enough for this to be, you know, the next thing that goes kabombs. So what are the, so when we start talking about this, starts bringing up an opportunity for us to say, here's what's scalable. Here's what the reality is. And it brings up a whole new, this is what I hope for the industry, and a whole new wave of opportunity for professionals, for human beings who have understood how to scale other technologies. If I look at telecommunications, or if I look at signals, and or even just things around some electronic engineering and chip tech, there's a lot of processing power and information that's going to come out there. All this is yet to be seen. And I hope that by the time that happens, I'm sitting applauding you and all the women in Web3 in the podcast about the huge impact you've made with the community, because no longer we're having to have these conversations about some boy who found some gap in some legislation to do something ridiculous that set us back 5 years. Like,
I'm really enjoying our conversation.
I'm glad.
And I also, I really like that you care a lot about financial inclusion and access, as you were talking about. It feels like you're trying to close a similar knowledge gap in some of your work. You're probably more on the kind of finance and blockchain side of things, if Women of Web3 is more on the kind of broader emerging technologies and helping people access it and get educated on it.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm helping people get educated. I'm putting Web3 technology on helmets, on people that care about their merchandising, that care about their t-shirts, their fan experiences, their knowledge of databases, custody, funny phrases. Like, that's nowhere, and nor should it be. And I think that's a huge opportunity still when I look at the space of the translators of this technology. The people that understand the power of it don't have to understand how it's made or how to make it. It's like telling people you can turn on a light.
Yeah, absolutely agree. There's this, it does still feel like there's actually a lot of focus on the kind of a lot of the technical side of it, when actually most people, yeah, don't need to know the technicalities of it. And also, like, not everybody has to care about that side of it. I think there's a sort of nerdy enjoyment in people that, yeah, really thrive on that, some of that nerdy technical detail. And actually, you're right. You actually just need lots of people building in a new space like this that don't need to worry too much about the actual ins and outs of it, of like exactly how blockchain works and all of this stuff works. But you need them sort of invested in the broader vision around it.
Correct. Correct. And I think that's the bet I'm making it authentify, right? We're building an infrastructure for a space. Like, I'm not going to be, when I look at the legislation I'm enabling around digital product passports, or people having accountability around the physical world around us, you know, that's a basic need. Like, you'd want to know that your kid's toy doesn't have lead paint. You should know that in a cooler technological way. Okay, now that if you know that, could you use that to dispense the toy when the toy is ready to be traded? Or like, what is the life cycle, and how does technology enable a human need? And that's the difference. A lot of people get really caught up on saying, has to be all this way. And you're like, no system in the world works like that. So why? And when you start seeing that, that's when people realize they have agency in being in this space. They realize they have something to contribute, which they so do. Because if they didn't, it'd be adopted and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Just briefly, so would you describe Authentify as creating digital product passports? Or is that kind of part of what you do?
That is part of what we do. So that was one of the main things we enable. So I have a very similar premise when I think of like human identity. My passport is one of the many ways I identify myself. What Authentify is doing is creating an infrastructure for interoperability of information about objects and ownership of them. So maybe with my helmet, I have ownership because if I own the helmet, I can go somewhere. Those are all tokens and accesses and very technical things. But if we think about it in a very experience world, I'm enabling us to have first party data, information about things that were kind of living in very disparate places, put back together. And when you put things back together, you can see a hell of a lot more clear and you can enable a hell of a lot more things. And that takes advantage of a lot of technologies beyond just blockchain.
Briefly on the AI side of things. So I saw that you're working with UNESCO.
I am.
You're on the...
Very proud of that.
Yeah, so you're a UNESCO Business Impact Council member advising on ethics and AI. So like, yeah, amazing. Congrats.
It is amazing. I was pretty proud. I was like, I remember the day that happened, the invitation came. I was like sort of crying, of excited. Yeah, of course I was excited. I miss nobody. Like I grew up in Brazil, dude. Like, and if I told somebody I was going to be invited by the UNESCO to contribute on something I had no agency on. And I think this is why I'm so open about it. I think a lot of people with these fancy council titles or things that to me were once unattainable often don't speak about where they came from and how they got there, which is why they look unattainable. And I was pretty excited. And it was mostly to do with being really clear about what I love. And I love digital identity. And I love this notion of how do we look at technology as a way of building, you know, we are always going, I think there's an undisputable understanding we're going to live around tech and around data in our lives. So if that's going to happen, the digital infrastructure and the ethics in which that happens really matters to me. And when we talk about artificial intelligence or regenerative AI, computational power and the understanding of, you know, the importance of attributes and all these things around it is insane. The consequences of it are hard in the average human brain to just process. So in this work, we look at how do we change the value systems and how do we enable regulation and research to go towards fixing problems that actually have a connection to the 17 sustainable development goals. So we start to look at tech and go, cool, for what? How does this connect to if we're announced serious about attaining any of the 17 sustainable development goals in the world? How are we going to go about that? And what role does AI in ESG and in technology around infrastructure has to play? So that's the kind of work that we do. So we evaluate around 200 projects a year, and we do a lot of research work in collaboration with private industry and public sector to say, okay, what are the things that should be funded and how do we move this to educate the regulators and institutions about, you know, you look at the average, like, ESG landscape, there's about 700 ESG ERP providers or suppliers of SaaS. How do you connect all this world? If you look at ReFi, the list is also another 200 players in the space. For the average big company, they're looking around going, what? They can't even keep their own talent and explain to their shareholders what the heck they're doing, let alone, you know, make sense of any of this. So that's a little bit of our work and a little bit of our intention and impact.
Oh, it sounds like you're really enjoying the work there.
I do. As an entrepreneur, I'm very practical. So I kind of sometimes struggle with these large organizations that have processes, procedures, and talk a lot when I'm in my other hats, living, you know, a monthly burn rate, go, 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 go type of environment, which is a bit more of the reality of the world. And so I think that that's a bit of my purpose in there and certainly an exercise of patience on an average day sometimes.
Yeah. I can imagine there's a lot of red tape, but that's awesome to hear that you're working on that. Cause it also feels like you do need a real mix of people solving those really meaty problems and like having those kind of discussions around ethics and generative AI. Cause it's, I think that's like our next biggest thing to solve for. If identity is this like huge beast to solve, I think the kind of policy around generative AI needs to catch up fast because the technology is just light years ahead of any of these organizations and what they're able to kind of regulate for.
Exactly. And it just is. It's already, right? The cat's already out of the bag.
Yeah.
Like, totally. So it's just the thing about, I think, the work that you do here or the work that we can do is like, all right, the cat's already out of the bag. What opportunity does that represent? And if I leave somebody with a comment around this, it's just like, what are you in love with and like excited about? And how do you think that that looks like on your future? In the future of like, you know, we have a little bit of time in this vessel and, you know, what kind of impact and things can you do? That's going to be impacted by all these really big technologies. So if you can kind of just look through there, that lenses, there's plenty of room for agency and for work ahead.
Lastly, Bianca, where can people find you?
I think LinkedIn is probably one of the best vehicles. Just send me a direct message there. I try my best to answer them all weekly. If I can be of any help, like if there's any part of what I'm doing that you're keen to do or any area that you're working on, reach out and ask. And if I can be of help, my life has been a lot of help from other people and just asking. So my ask back is, yeah, if there's anything cool about this episode or anything cool you're working on that you think I should know that connects to any of the companies I'm working with, you'll find them on LinkedIn. And if you're curious, you heard here what I'm interested in.
Brilliant. Okay. So you're Bianca Lopez with an S on LinkedIn and people come and find you, and I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Thank you so much, Laura, and continue to do the amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for your time.
For listening to the Women of Web3 podcast, I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're at a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.